Hello and welcome to another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. This is Willem Vanderhorst, your host for the show. Well, it's a few days into fall, technically, autumn for the Europeans, I believe. And it does not feel like that at the moment of recording. And I think even by the time I publish, it'll still be some pretty seriously warm Indian summer type season here in Chicago. Which has been bright blue and sunny for the past few days. Even this, these past few days have been just like silly hot, like over 90 degrees, 33, 34 degrees Celsius, which is pretty late in September for this kind of weather. So anyhow, I'm certainly not going to be complaining to be still in shorts at this time of year. But that adds up to like the number of people that are still telling me, oh, you haven't lived through a winter in Chicago. Winter is coming. Make sure you're ready. You might be running away. Oh, you've only seen the summer. That kind of comments. And I'm like, well, it's just been amazing. And it's still like end of September. I don't see a single sign of bad weather. So I'm sure the winter is arriving. I have no doubt of that. But meanwhile, I'm still enjoying this sunny weather. I'm just like starting to believe that this place is just sunny nonstop. Now, I also know that weather-wise, that some other parts of the world have been like seriously hit. And a lot of thoughts go to friends and a lot of the other people who lost enormous amounts, and even people died in the earthquakes in Mexico and the hurricanes hitting the Mexican Gulf at the moment. So in Florida and Puerto Rico. So that's been tough. And I think there's been huge floods in Nepal and northern India. And there's always catastrophes everywhere in the world, but I think there's been like a serious series in a row of heavy catastrophes. So if you haven't given anything to support the disaster crisis, you might consider giving out to the Red Cross. The Red Cross is one of the good organizations for that. But all the major big companies, Facebook and everybody else, are raising money. So there's opportunities left, right, and center to be doing that. So if you haven't already, consider giving for disaster relief for sure. I have no idea where I went in that direction. It's just on my mind right now. But it's not at all what we're talking about. I guess the best closest link is the idea of being able to travel, and the fact that we do travel and use travel even faster, but we travel a lot more. And as you guys know, if you've been listening to the show, I've traveled quite a lot to a few different places. So this is leading us to our guest. I came across the game first, called Itchy Feet. And Itchy Feet is a webcomic in the first place, created by Malachi Rempin. And Malachi is an American screenwriter, writer, filmmaker, and so he also does this webcomic about traveling and travel tropes and learning languages called Itchy Feet, and it's really cute, and he draws himself, and he's got quite a following, and he created on the back of that a travel game, which I thought was really fun as well, that he crowdfunded on Kickstarter recently, and I reached out to him to have a conversation, and we had a really fun conversation about storytelling, about creating art, about the webcomic, about traveling stories. We had this fantastic conversation, so that's coming up in a couple of minutes. But before we get there, I just want to remind everybody, so if you listen to the show and you appreciate the show, it makes a huge difference if you take a few minutes out of your day and leave us a rating or review on your favorite podcasting app. So that might be Apple Podcasts if you're listening through an iPhone, or if you're on your computer by chance, you can open up iTunes and just leave the review there. That allows a lot more people to discover the show. And even just like giving me feedback, like sending me a few thoughts, telling me how I'm doing, giving me feedback, that makes a hell of a difference, that I know that you're appreciating the show. So you can reach out to me directly by email. That's at Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M, at icecreamforeveryone.net. That's my main website, www.icecreamforeveryone, all spelled out, .net. You can also find Ice Cream for Everyone on Facebook, and you can like it. You can post comments there, send me a message there directly. If you type in Ice Cream for Everyone, you'll find it. You'll just recognize the logo. Or you can reach out to me on Twitter. That's at IC letters I and C Willem, W-I-L-L-E-M. So there's many different ways in which you can contact me, of course. And it just really makes a difference. Of course, I take time for this out of my day. And I know that some people appreciate and really, really makes a hell of a difference when you take a couple of minutes to reach out to me and tell me. And it helps other people find the show, as I've said. One last point. There was a little bit of sound breakdown. Malachi is in Germany. I was here in the US, and we're having a conversation online. Unfortunately, sometimes there's like some technical issues. And so like it breaks down a tiny bit. So apologize for that. Please bear with me in the couple of moments where the conversation breaks down, but it doesn't make it's not a huge impediment to the flow of the conversation is what I'm trying to say. So apologies for that. And I'm actually working on getting a faster internet connection. So to make sure that that kind of stuff doesn't happen as much. And without further ado, please enjoy the conversation I had with Malachi.
Hello.
Thank you very much for making it. It was a bit of an impromptu, well, like many of the guests I have, are like opportunistic, just because Kickstarter knows by now that I tend to support a lot of gaming projects that I came across Itchy Feet and really liked the illustrations as well and a lot of the game. And so I reached out and now here we are.
Nice. That's awesome. I'm really glad you did.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you for making time for this. So for everybody's sake, can we just start with a bit of an intro on, and I believe you're in Germany right now. I'm in Chicago. So I also love that I'm able to have these kinds of conversations remotely, but just a bit of an intro on who you are and where you're from.
Sure. I'm Malachi Rempen and I grew up kind of all over the world, but I live now in Berlin, Germany. Mostly I grew up in the States. Moved here to chase a girl, and then I married her, and now we have a baby, and now we're dealing with that.
Great. Congratulations. Is that a recent, the baby, or?
9 months ago, yeah.
Great. Fantastic.
So, yeah.
Was it your parents that had, like, jobs that took them to different places, or?
Yeah, they were, they ran a business. It was a interior design, sort of export import business. And so they kind of took the excuse of business trips to go on trips with the family. And we always tagged along to various places, Egypt and Africa and all over the place. So I always liked traveling. I always liked new cultures, new languages. When I was a kid, I kept this little journal. I remember just writing down all the different, like, foreign words in foreign languages and what it means. I was writing my own dictionary, basically. And I was always fascinated by the idea that, you know, you can have a different type of life anywhere, everywhere you go. It's people are doing their thing and living their lives and doing it in a completely different way. And it's great to, that's my favorite thing about travel. I love to get out of your own echo chamber and sort of your own box and just see, you know, the way you're doing things is fine, but it's not the only way that there is.
Yes.
It's a good reminder to have.
Yeah, I completely agree. And I have had a similar, I didn't travel as much, but I was born in the States and then raised in France. My father's Dutch, my mom's originally Spanish. And so,
wow.
But they traveled around and lived in different places before I was born. And then I went on to travel a lot as well. So, like that. So did that mean you also were interested in languages quite early?
I think I was mostly interested because I wasn't raised speaking any other languages. My parents, my dad really wanted my brothers and I to grow up feeling Americans. He himself is German. My mom's okay. American, but grew up in Ireland. And so he felt like a foreigner, I think, and he really wanted us to not have that, feel like where we were was our home. Now, ironically, all three of us are living in completely different parts of the world. He's the only one left in the States. and I came to Germany to learn German because I wanted to pick up this part of the language. It was always kind of awkward as a kid. I had half my family is German, and it always kind of came up when we went to family gatherings and meetings, and it just was always this sort of like, so, still don't speak German, huh? Yeah, well, you know, one of these days. And so now I do. And so I can rub it back in their faces.
Great. And so did you live in different parts of the States growing up, or you stayed in the same spot?
I grew up in Albuquerque, New Mexico.
Okay.
For most of my life. And then I went to college in LA.
All right.
I studied film. And I lived there for years afterwards. And then I came to Europe, yeah. So did mostly you... stayed in the Southwest.
All right, cool. Did you work in the movie industry or?
Yeah, I freelanced. I was an intern at Sundance. I did. I couldn't. Part of the reason I got out of LA was I couldn't really do the like climb up the ladder thing, which is, you know, what you have to do if you want to succeed in the movie business in Hollywood. And I just didn't feel like doing that. So I got out. Well, also because LA is a hard city to live in. It's, I don't know. It's got great people and a great energy, and it's full of ideas, which I love about it. But you have to put up with just the worst traffic and terrible sort of quality of life to go with it. And I found in Berlin a city that has that same sort of why not attitude that LA has, but it's not, you know, there are green spaces and you can actually bike around, and really appreciate that about it.
Yeah. I've heard great things about Berlin. I've only passed through, but I've not really had a chance to explore it much, since still on my list, the ever lengthening list of places to go. So, you did a lot of trips, like vacation kind of trips with your parents, as you were saying. Did you then want to go on extensive kind of traveling, and did you do that at some point?
Yeah, well, I never, you know, I think part of the reason I never really, you know, when you're younger, a lot of people go on like a sort of, they call it in Australia and England, a gap year, where they go kind of take this year off between high school and college and just travel around the world for a year and do this like extended trip. I never really did that because I was so buried in filmmaking, and you know, both are time consuming, expensive pursuits. I for the longest time chose film. And so when I left for Europe, it was supposed to just be a sort of 5-6 month. That was supposed to be my kind of belated gap year. And it ended up, well, I'm still here. So that was almost 10 years ago. So, I guess I'm still on my gap decade. Yes. But I never, yeah. So, yeah. And then just by myself, well, I never traveled completely by myself, but with friends or family or, you know, I like to go on like 2-3 week trips to various places and get into trouble and then come home. That's kind of my travel pace anyway.
Good. And on the movie side of things, did you have ambitions to, were you writing or did you want to direct, or what were the ambitions for the long run?
Yep. Writing and directing, I took the opportunity to come to Europe to do a lot of writing, and I ended up, I don't know, it's a funny path. I wanted to get better at storytelling, so I was writing a lot of different scripts and doing this comic, Itchy Feet, on the side. And it was just originally it was just supposed to be for my friends and family, basically, where I thought, like, instead of doing a blog or instead of doing like writing emails, you know, BCCing everybody that I knew, I decided to do it in comic form. And I'd always kind of doodled around with comics, but I'm not a trained artist. I'm not a cartooning or in comics is never really a passion of mine. I kind of did it as a side thing. And in the bulk of my time, I was writing scripts, and I got tired of writing scripts for films. The thing with film screenwriting is that you're always, especially when you're working at sort of a no low budget level, you're always thinking about how can I do this? Like how can I feasibly actually make this happen? So you're constantly, as you're writing, thinking like, do I have access to this location, or am I going to be able to find somebody who can actually pull this off, or like, how can I achieve this effect, you know, without spending a lot of money? Like, what's the, you know, so that's constantly running through your mind when you're like, the budget and the time that you have is always, so when you're making these projects, because you have to kind of make do with a lot less. And even Hollywood films to a certain extent have to deal with the limitations of real life. And I had a lot of ideas that I couldn't really express in a movie form because they just would have been completely impossible. And so I put aside film writing for a little bit, and I started writing on a series of kids' books that I had come up with. And these were like kind of bigger, more insane ideas that would have, again, been unfeasible. And in the meantime, Itchy Feet, this comic, was like picking up a little bit of steam. It was like snowballing a little bit. It had found a niche audience within language learners, and there hadn't really ever been a dedicated comic for language learners. At the time I was living in France, and then I was, and then I lived in Italy and Germany and Morocco, kind of within the span of 2 years. And so I had a lot to say. I was learning French and German and Italian, and kind of all at once. And so I kind of turned those into comics, and those kind of picked up because I guess, yeah, like I said, there hadn't really been a comic for language learners before. And so I found this audience, and it kept growing. And since then, like looking back on the last, you know, 6-7 years of Itchy Feet, I have learned so much about storytelling and about you know, beginning, middle, and end, and about delivering a point, and about character arcs, and but through Itchy Feet, this like weekly comic, short form comic, and it's really informed the rest of the writing that I've done, which is, so it's been really valuable.
That's fantastic, and I'm sure that a lot of the people that listen, and myself to start with, are interested in storytelling, and it's something that it's a recurring theme in a lot of different, either creative industries or creative arts that I'm interested in. So what are a couple of, I guess, lessons that you've learned in that sense, working through the comic? What would you say is like one of the most important things that you've either discovered or learned?
Well, there's two real big takeaways. And I had a bunch. I actually gave a talk on this exact subject of what I learned about storytelling from Itchy Feet. But the big ones that kind of stuck with me are, number one, to begin with the end in mind. And that's a sort of classic phrase from that book, The Seven Habits of Highly Effective People. But it applies to storytelling completely. And that is that, you know, you want to know where you're going. And that it can change, and it can, the way you get there can meander, but a story should have an ending. It needs a point. That's what a story is. A story is the ending, and then the rest of it is just setting that up so that you understand it. And when I'm writing these short comics, I'm always thinking of the last panel before I even start on the first one. And that's because it needs to feel like a contained little universe, and that's what a story is, but this is kind of on a micro scale. And so it's been really good practice to be like, okay, what's the shortest amount of panels and time and real estate that I can use, visual real estate, to actually communicate the last bit? And so I have to start with that, like, what am I trying to say with this? And so that brings me to the second thing that I have taken away from Itchy Feet and comic storytelling, which is that everything needs to come from a truth. A place of truth. The point of the story should be true. And I know that sounds kind of strange and kind of abstract, but what I mean is when I sit down to write a comic, I don't start with a joke, because at least for me, I just don't have the, I don't, it just comes off that I'm trying to be funny and not actually, it doesn't come off actually funny. And the comics of mine that have been the most successful and found the biggest audience are the ones that start with something that's true and then either exaggerate it or find something funny within it. But those comics always get, you know, people writing comments saying like, oh, that's so true. Ha ha, that's so true. And it's the reason it's funny is because you recognize it in yourself, you know, and that's true of the best, I think, of the best comedy or the best stories in general, is you get to the end and you go like, man, that hits me because it's true, because it's saying something about me.
Yes.
And so when you're writing a story, and whether it's a web comic or whether it's a major motion picture, you need to not be thinking about yourself. You need to be thinking, am I telling my reader something true about themselves? That's why they're reading it. They're not reading it for me. They don't want to know about my life. They want to know about their own lives, reflected through you. So yeah, that was the second thing, is like, start with a truth and go from there, and the rest will fall into place. At the end of the day, if you have a story that makes no logical sense, that makes no where the narrative is broken, where the characters don't arc, if still at the end the end is true and you come away feeling like that's still a truth, then it's a successful story. All the rest of the parts can be broken, but you can have all that in place. I'm sure you've seen those movies and read those books where everything, it works like clockwork, but it's empty and it's soulless and there's nothing at the end of it, and you forget about it like cotton candy the next day.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. That's great. Thank you. And how about, so some of those truths, I mean, I imagine some of them are inspired by experiences that you've had. Are they mostly experiences you've had, or like equal parts stuff that you've heard from other people, or things that just maybe make sense?
That's a tricky thing is I've made a couple comics where I did it kind of based on stories that people had told me. And unless I've had something similar and I can identify the truth within it, it tends to come off. It tends to flop.
Mm.
And that, I think, speaks to why, at least in writing, people always say, write what you know. They're not saying just stick to boring things within your own life. What they're saying is you can only identify the truth within your own life. You can't. It's a lot harder anyway to identify that in other people's lives. But I mean, you know, that said, there are great storytellers who can inhabit people who are completely not themselves and still find beautiful truths within those lives. So, you know, maybe I guess if I was a better storyteller, I could do that. But anyway, that's what they say for people starting out, write what you know, because that at least will be true. If you write what you know, then at least it'll be true. And then that will reflect something. Somehow someone else will pick up on that, because we're all human. We're all going through the same thing. Nobody's an alien who has no relatable experiences whatsoever, you know?
Yes, absolutely. All right. How about like a couple of travel stories? Do you have a favorite one that you tell on a regular basis, or that you would tell or use when you're doing a talk, or?
Travel stories. Like a specific one?
Yeah. Best or worst, perhaps.
Well, I recently, last year, September, I went on a trip to Nepal with my brothers, my two brothers, mm-hmm. younger brothers. We went on a motorcycle trip. We rented, I forget what they're called. I'm not a bike or car person. They're really cool old vintage bikes from when, you know, they're British sort of style.
Yes, but it's an Indian brand.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure.
I'm like trying to remember it.
Grand Royale or yes. Battle Royale.
Yes. It's not. It's something like that. Oh, God bless you. Yeah. It'll come back to me. Yes.
Royal Enfield.
That's right. Royal Enfield.
All the car and bike people are just like, oh, Jesus, come on.
I'm not much of a bike or car person either.
Anyways, this is like beast of a bike, and it's sturdy. It's not particularly maneuverable, but it like is loyal and it'll get you through the day. And we went to Nepal, and our goal was to kind of like do a loop around. We had a month, and our goal was to like do a loop of Nepal. And we look at a map, and it's like, oh yeah, it's like roads all over the place. Google Maps, like yellow roads everywhere. It's just like, oh, this is gonna be great. And both one of my brothers and I had both been to India, where for the most part it's quite flat and it's quite open. And I don't know, I guess in our heads we had sort of imagined the Tibetan plateau, where, you know, there was gonna be all kinds of space and it was gonna be like these, you know, long extended drives with the bike along mountain roads. And what it ended up being was, I mean, Nepal is essentially one giant Himalayan foothill. It's rough, rocky jungle. It's not highlands until you get like way up into the mountains. And it's all mountains, but most of it's jungle mountains. Most of it's like rocky, non-existent roads that are just paths. I mean, even the main freeways that go between the main cities, Kathmandu, and I forget now the name of the other big like tourist one, but that's just like littered with potholes and it's curving around mountains and these insane passes. And so when we wanted to get kind of off the beaten track, it quickly became, you know, we got way lost in these foothills where there's just nobody. I mean, there are people, yeah, but there's nothing. There's no services or any kind. And now here's a really good example of why you should begin a story with the end in mind, because I don't know where this story is going and what the ending of it is. But we did get we got lost for 3 days in the jungles and the foothills. And the thing about traveling with my brothers is one of them, every time he goes anywhere, everything goes wrong. And he loses his bag and he gets stranded and he gets robbed or he gets, you know, the trains miss connections or whatever it is. And the other one always makes it out. So like, no matter what happens, everything goes well for him. He always manages to meet somebody who knows the right way. He always manages to, recently he was in Sri Lanka and his phone fell off the train and he just jumped off the train again in the jungle and just like found it, caught the next one and was like, he's like, I got my phone. And so the two of them together just sort of like neutrals out. So you'd think it was sort of, it would sort of balance out, but actually what ended up happening during that was like, first it went my youngest brother's way, where it was just, we were fording rivers and the locals were looking at us like, you need to go back the other way, but we couldn't go back the other way because the sun was setting and we had that road had already passed. And so now we're in this area where there are landslides and there's no gas. Because of the landslides, the gas truck couldn't make it. And then there are these like tiny mountain villages where there's no electricity or running water or like amenities of any kind. And then it would swing back the other way where out of nowhere, we'd come upon a 5-star hotel, fully decked out, completely empty, 5-star hotel in the middle of the jungle with, all the amenities, a full like suite of rooms completely available. And it was just like, it was exhausting traveling with them because it was this pendulum swinging between misfortune and then just like cartoonish good fortune.
Wow. That's great. Fantastic. Thank you. That sounds like a really, really amazing trip. That's great. I haven't seen my
I wouldn't recommend yet. It. I wouldn't recommend, like, if you're going to go to Nepal,
don't do it that way.
Planes into the mountains, go on a hiking trip or something. Just don't rent bikes because it's messy.
Yeah, I got that. But it's great that you're doing these kinds of trips with your brothers. I'm also very close to my brothers and sisters, but we haven't seen each other all together in a little while as well. The same tendency. Like, well, my older brother just moved to Sri Lanka and I just moved to the States. The two others are in the south of France.
Did you used to travel with them a lot?
No, we never really. No, not really. We spent time together, but we never went on... We didn't go on many trips together. So I'm just thinking about it. No, we spent time, but I would go, like, my brothers used to live in the Maldives and went to visit there, but he was working there. So we didn't go on a trip. We just spent time there. Same thing in Bali. And then they came to see me in Singapore for a while when I lived there, but we didn't do that kind of trip, like go hiking all together or something like that. Not in a long time. Yeah. Wow, so something to look into. Sorry.
No, I was just going to say you've also got quite a colorful international background.
Yes.
It's awesome.
So thank you. All right. So you got like some popularity going on with the comic. And at that point, as it was getting the web comic was popular, were you and building an audience? Is that something that started generating kind of like revenue money for you as well? Or
I feel like if I was a smarter business person, I probably could have leveraged, or I could now leverage it into some sort of like full-time work. But I, you know, my heart's still in filmmaking and yeah. And then not really in business. And so I never really, I don't think, took full advantage of what Itchy Feet could do for me.
Hmm.
But, you know, at the end of the day, I just enjoy doing it as kind of a comic. I'm glad that it allows me to do these fun projects like the game. It was kickstarted.
We're going to get into that. But so tell me, on the filmmaking side of things, what are some of your influences and favorite films and directors?
Oh, man. I have wide taste. I really like anything that my chief interest in filmmaking and kind of why I do it is I like world building. I like transporting people. I mean, it all comes down to travel at the end, I suppose. But, you know, I like taking people on a trip, on a journey when they watch a film, where they're going somewhere else, where they're traveling to a different world, meeting different people. And that doesn't necessarily mean sci-fi or fantasy. Like the Coen brothers are my favorite directors, and it's because they build this like airtight universe. Each of their films is this world in which things just are the way they are in that world. And I have a great deal of respect and admiration for directors that can pull that off, because it's not an easy thing to do. And it's not an easy, it's easy to get a, to get carried away with that and forget too about the things like the heart of the story and why people even, nobody wants to go to a world that's empty of people, right? You want, you travel there because you want to meet people and then learn something about yourself. That's the same thing with travel, and it's the same with films as well. But you go there, you see the film because you want to go on a journey, but at the end of the day, you want to reflect upon your own existence. So my favorite filmmakers are, yeah, the Coen brothers, Tim Burton, Terry Gilliam, Wes Anderson, like these guys that can just, but not guys either, Julie Taymor, like these directors that can construct this delightful place for you to go and spend a little bit of time in. I love that.
Beautiful. And a favorite film of the Coen brothers, for example?
Oh man. Well, Fargo's a great one. That's probably their best, if not jostling for first with No Country for Old Men, in my opinion. I think it's going to be hard for them to top that ever. The funny thing about the Coens too is that to me they're hit and miss. Like some of their films, when they're on, they are the best in the business, in my opinion, and the best living filmmakers. But they're not always on. I saw this last one they did, Hail Caesar.
Yes.
I thought it was terrible. I thought it was really, like, I couldn't understand why I was watching any of the things that anyone was doing. I mean, their world was still there, and that sort of, like, Coen-esque sort of universe that they were building. But it was just really didn't work.
Yeah.
And then, you know, what's funny about them is they could turn around and then pull out another No Country out of nowhere. So I'll always go buy a ticket to their movie, whether or not, you know, they always are on. But I think, too, that, you know, it's good to have those kind of influences where you realize like it's okay to not be on all the time. If I do a comic, for example, I like the nice thing about doing a comic every week is sometimes they suck. Sometimes you just got to get one out. And it's like, it's the nice thing about keeping to a schedule is it's just like, just do it. Okay. This isn't your best work. Do better next week. You know? And I think, so it's harder to, I think it would be harder to hold as your idol, someone like Kubrick, who really never made a bad film, who was just on fire, you know, on all cylinders every single time. And that must be hard to kind of, because, you know, the rest of us, it doesn't work out that way.
Yeah. And how do you fuel, like, inspiration to keep writing every week? Is there anything that you rely on or just anything you keep observing everywhere?
I mean, I don't know. It's a good question. I feel like, it's funny, you know, people always ask, people talk about inspiration as if it's somewhere, as if it's something you need to look for outside. But for me, it bubbles up from inside. I've got stuff that needs to be made. And it's like a, you know, creatives, I'm sure you know, that like you have a thing in your head that needs to get out into the world. And that's that, and then you're the conduit. And like, that is the reason that you make a thing. Whether it's a comic or a card game or a movie or whatever it is, or a table, you know, or a painting, anything, a photo. It's something in your head that needs to be made physical, and you need to figure out a way to do it. And that kind of is how. So I've got a bunch of stuff bubbling up. It's not really. I don't have to. I'm lucky, I guess. I don't have to go out and seek it. I've always got something that I need to work on.
Yeah.
It drives you mad, you know. It sits there and like, and
needs to get out.
It's like ticking clock, yeah.
Mm, interesting.
Get it out of your head.
That's
you need
great.
To exercise.
Yes. All right. And how? So, how did the idea of turning the comic into a game come around?
Basically, there wasn't a travel game. There wasn't a game that was travel themed that I could find. At least not a good one. And I thought it would be kind of fun to make a game that was made for travelers. Like it was a travel game in the sense that it was a game you take when traveling, in addition to being a travel themed game, kind of a both things at once. And again, it just wasn't something that existed. And I felt like this is a thing that should be.
Yes.
And so I, you know, but I, I don't know if I would have come upon it if Itchy Feet, the comic, didn't already have a little bit of a following. Because that's the thing with Kickstarter, right? Is that you kind of have to have a couple people listening to you already. It's hard to launch it into the vacuum. So it kind of came to me as this, I don't know, just like, wouldn't it be great if I embarked on a card game? And
Do you play card and board games as well? Because actually, you know, it's super popular in Germany, obviously. The biggest tabletop game convention and trade show in the world, the Spiel.
Yeah, and I heard that it's like five times bigger than Comic-Con. Like, the numbers are insane. Like, the size of the industry.
In Essen, it's really, really big. Yeah, it's huge. So I don't know if you come across it or if you play board games or card games with friends or.
Yeah, well, I mean, pretty casually. I got to say, like, I'm not a. I know it's one of your kind of hobbies and interests. Yeah. But I played them casually. I have a friend who's like really into it. He's got shelves full of board games, and so we have what we call nerd nights.
Sure.
And we get together with our friends and play and break out one of his games. We played Pandemic Legacy through and. So it was thanks to him, I think, that I started to think about board and card games differently than just your typical deck of cards where you play Go Fish and Poker on, or board games or Monopoly. I mean, you know, it's so funny. The more you learn about board games and card games, the more you realize, like, wow, the classics are actually terrible.
Yes.
They're really, really bad games. I don't know why people keep buying them.
Yes.
I played a lot more to kind of get into, I don't know, just to kind of see what's out there, you know, what kind of mechanics. But I think part of why a lot of people, when the Kickstarter came out, a lot of people were like, wow, this is such a unique idea. Like, where did you come up with this unique idea? And I think they're part of the blessing is that I don't know anything about card games and board games. So it's unique because, like, it's not based on anything because I don't know anything about it. I didn't even know, like, the terminology that was involved. People were saying, is it this kind of game or is it that kind of game? It was like, well, it's a deck of cards, and on the cards there are printed things. And we just, when we were developing it, was like, basically just, is this fun or not? Are we having fun? And if not, let's change what's not fun. And so we took a very amateur, I don't know if amateur, I would say naive.
I don't think it's perhaps naive, but I don't think amateur, because everything I've heard from other game designers is basically just playtesting and trying and trial and working out that way seems to be the best thing to do, the best way to do things from what I've heard.
Yeah, and I think, you know, it helps. There might be such a thing as too much involvement in a certain thing, like films and movies and these kinds of things, for example. I'm saturated with this. Like, I love it. And so I'm constantly thinking about it. I'm always, my brain's always on when I'm critiquing a film, when I'm watching it in the theater. So when I sit down to write one, you know, it's like you've got this whole library of other work that you are constantly thinking about. Am I referencing this or am I stealing from that or am I borrowing from that? What did this filmmaker do? What did that filmmaker do? So it was really refreshing to enter this project. I know nothing. Let's just see, is this fun? Is that fun? I don't know. Like, let's see what we can come up with. It was really nice to have a blank slate.
That's great. Can you just explain the game a little bit for the people who are listening who won't have heard about it just yet, just to like how it functions?
Yeah. So it's a travel-themed game. So there are country cards and there are item cards. And so basically the idea is that you need to be the first to travel to the country in the center of the table. It's a country card that's put in the center, and then each player gets their own country in front of them. And so you have to travel through the country that's in front of you and then be the first to travel to the country in the center. And each country has three types of items that's required to go to it. If you're going to go to Antarctica, for example, you're going to need some cold weather gear. You're going to need something for the adventure, like some adventure gear. And I think the third one for Antarctica is party. So, of course, you know, Antarctica is the best place to party. So you need to collect, and in the deck is full of different types of these kinds of items. So there are four different party items, four different adventure items, and so on. And so your goal is to collect those and then hang on to your passport, which is also another card. And your hand is basically then like your bag. So you're packing your bag for this trip. You need your passport, but the other players, you can trade with them, you can steal from them, you can, there are other cards, there are events and special items and sort of forbidden items, these other things that kind of mix up in your pursuit to sort of collect these items and be the first to travel to the center. That's the basic idea. It's a pretty simple, game, actually. Great.
No, but it sounds like simple. That, I like your illustration style. I like that it sounded fun. I like that it was for travelers, and you're right. I hadn't come across a game for travelers before, and playing to a lot of tropes. And there's so many people that can relate to that now, given, you know, so many people have traveled or travel more. Or there's a lot more access to it, and anything from the kind of gap years that we talked about earlier to, yeah, a lot more people were able to go away, to further away to with cheaper flights, etc. Yeah. So.
Yeah, exactly. It's a much more, it's a booming industry. And yeah, I think it's something that people who like to travel, or even, you know, people who like to armchair travel. That's the other thing. It's like, you can go to Iceland and China and Mexico all from the comfort of your own home.
Yes, exactly. And how did you, so you did a lot of testing, I'm suspecting, to just like evolve the game and work it out. And then to go on to Kickstarter, how did that work out in terms of preparation? How did you find it to organize and prepare for the crowdfunding campaign?
Yeah, it was always kind of how I knew, because I knew that since I had this audience with Itchy Feet, and since it was going to be an Itchy Feet game, like a game where the was connected to the comic, although you don't have to know the comic to play the game at all. It's not, there's no like in jokes or anything. I knew that Kickstarter would be the best road for that. And I'd never done a Kickstarter before, or any kind of crowdfunding project. So I was a little bit, well, that's not true. I also have a Patreon, which is kind of like, if you don't know what Patreon is, it's like an ongoing Kickstarter where you, it's just for anyone who's listening, you might not know, where it's like you support someone who's doing something on an ongoing basis. Kickstarter is more just like a one-off project where it's a limited time frame, and usually it's a limited offer for if it's a product or something. So I'd done a little bit of, I knew a little bit about crowdfunding, but I mean, you know, my Patreon's not an outstanding success. So I only really kind of went into it thinking, okay, what's the minimum I need to kind of scrape by? What's the sort of basics I need to do in order to appeal to my crowd and in order for them to get the game? And so in terms of preparation, I did a lot of – I read – I'm going to botch his name now, but you know Jamie Stegmeier? Yeah. From Stonemeyer Games, I think it's the company, where he has this blog, and it's exhaustive. It's like a – it's just – I still haven't finished all the articles, but I read almost all of them all the way through, made extensive notes. And that's a great resource if you just want to get an insight into it, into what kind of preparation you do beforehand, because it is a lot more than I thought it was going to be. I mean, you know, when we were designing the game, it was kind of like a fun side project. But as soon as the Kickstarter, like I was starting to gear up for that, it was like, okay, it's a heavy workload. There's a lot that you need to do. And I'm lucky because I was able to do all the artwork on the card and the design. I mean, with Maxime Rieu, who's the game designer I worked with. But, you know, not a team where you need to pull more people together, like then the project increases in difficulty exponentially because there's a lot of elements that need to come together.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. And it was successful. So, congratulations on that. That's just really great. What did you find one of the best things that you've done and one of the toughest during the campaign? Because I've heard from a lot of other people that it's pretty heavy during the whole campaign or stressful, et cetera. I don't know how you found it.
Our campaign was a little unique because when I had some friends here in Berlin who had launched a Kickstarter for a tech product that they'd come up with. It's called Awesome Shield, and it's a thing that's on top of Arduino for teaching kids how to code, or anyone really wants to learn how to code. So it was a tech that's kind of unrelated to games, but I sat down with them and asked a lot of questions. I remember the first time I met with them, they said, okay, a typical Kickstarter curve looks like this, and it's like an S-curve, right, where it curve in terms of like the funding over time. and you know, it starts out with a little bit of a boost because you get all the people that you know, all the people that are your friends and family, all the people that kind of follow you, and they all go in the first couple of days, and so you get this little jump. And then it kind of starts to plateau after about the first week because, you know, there's only so much interest you can generate. And so it kind of slows down, and then it peaks up again at the end. There's a bunch of people who were like, right, it's ending. And a bunch of other people who come across it for the first time and are like, oh my God, there's only 24 hours left. I got to go bye, bye, bye. And so there's like a little jump at the end. So it's like this S curve. And for some reason, I don't know what exactly happened, but on the Itchy Peak game curve. Oh, and so when I was sitting down with these friends of mine, they've said, so that's a typical curve. And they were saying, now what you, I mean, the ideal curve is if it's just a straight line, it's just a diagonal that goes from the bottom all the way and it just continues to build momentum all the way to the end. And I remember thinking like, well, yeah, but that's, I mean, that's impossible. Who would ever be able to achieve? I mean, unless, because it would need to be some sort of rolling kind of word of mouth thing or something. I don't even know how that would work. And I basically sat back and watched sort of with my jaw hitting the floor every day, as that's exactly what our graph did on the Itchy Feet, on the Itchy Feet game. It just went up and it didn't stop. I kept expecting the plateau. I was like, okay, today's the day where it's gonna plateau over. Don't feel bad if it, like, but it never did. It just kept going consistently up. I guess that's due to word of mouth. It's mostly due to Kickstarter. They do a lot of, I mean, just their big social network, basically. And they have a lot of people who, you know, like yourselves, who are tuned into new projects that are coming out. And so it kind of just slowly snowballs. But I was expecting a lot more stress. It's stressful now a little bit more after the campaign, because during the campaign, people get really excited because they're backers. They are supporting a project they think is cool and they want to see it succeed. And so they share it and they get involved in the story of it and they get involved in the promotion of it because they want to reach these stretch goals and they want to hit these things and they're on your side. As soon as the campaign ends, they become customers because now they've paid you money. And now they expect something that you've promised. And so now it's not that they're not necessarily on your side, but there's a wall that goes, it becomes a different relationship.
Yeah.
And so now I'm dealing with that end of things where it's like, you know, I have expectations to fulfill. I have a promise that I have to keep. And that's harder than just like rallying people up for an exciting idea.
Yes. Great. Thank you. All right. Let's see what it's, there is, we're going to be wrapping up. I usually finish with what I call the cool down questions. And this is a really great conversation because I usually like to say that the podcast is really about exploring how people create and what motivates them and everything. So it's great to talk about a bunch of different areas, including, you know, building an audience and storytelling and et cetera. However, it's still the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast. So I also ask about ice cream. Do you have a favorite flavor?
Yes. Lemon gelato.
Cool.
So my wife's Italian. Uh-huh. And she's very particular, like, taste when it comes to gelato. It has to be just right. It has to be proper. And good thing for us, in Berlin, there's a large Italian population. And so there's a lot of great gelateria around here, which I can get my lemon fix. Yeah, excellent. Definitely.
Very cool. Thank you. And how about, like, so we're talking about writing and screenwriting. Is there anything like of books about writing or similar that you would recommend particularly?
Absolutely. One of my favorites is Invisible Ink by Brian McDonald. It's a tiny book. It's probably 100 pages. It's one of those books, though, where every sentence you're just like mind blown. Like every chapter is maybe a page, but it's so insightful and so beautifully simplistic in its in delivering these ideas on storytelling and what a story is and like why we do these things. And it clarified so much for me. Invisible Ink, I highly recommend it. Another one. Oh, there's another book which I've just been reading called The Talent Code. And it's basically about, it's not about writing, but it's about how you build skills. And it goes into sort of the process of how people develop skills and how and why. Basically, he set out to answer the question, why is it that certain pockets of the world develop these little hot boxes of talent where people, where just a huge amount of really talented people come out of these really small areas. And he visited each of these different things. He went to the favelas in Brazil to look at soccer players. He went to these Russian tennis places. He went to, he talks about the Renaissance in Italy and in Florence and all of these sort of painters that came out of it. And he talks about why it is, how it is that we learn things. And it's, we have this idea that you're talented. You're either, that people who do great work do it because they're so good at it. They're so talented. They're just born great. And the way he describes it, his argument is that's not true at all. Everyone who's great at something put in the time, they put in the hours. And so it's a great book to read to remind yourself, like, all you need to do to get from where you want to be, from where you are currently to where you'd like to be, is it's you just got to put in the hours. You got to do that journey. You have to make the distance. And it's completely possible. It's anyone can do it. You just need to set aside that time and that mind power and build a habit out of it. It's pretty easy.
Great. The Talent Code. I'll check it out and I'll add it to the show notes as well. Another question I was curious about, because it's something, well, I work in advertising and marketing, and I know a lot of people who work in the film industry sometimes also work in advertising. Is that an area that you looked into, or?
No. I never really, but, I mean, I never really wanted to get into marketing or advertising, and I always proclaimed myself to be one of these people who hates ads and who, like, can't. You know, who hates how dishonest marketing is and how, you know, and sort of all this stuff. But I realize as I'm getting older and as I'm creating more things and how as I'm trying to reach people who want to get people to consume the things I create, I'm starting to realize that what marketing, all it really is just telling somebody about something that's cool and why it's cool and why they should be interested in it. That's basically all it is. And so I've had to teach myself a lot about marketing because, you know, at the end of the day, how's anyone going to find out about the stuff that you want to do or about the things that you think are interesting or that you think they might be into if you don't market to them?
Yes, it is. It's funny that way. It is. Yeah.
What do you think? What would you say would be your number one tip then for somebody like me who doesn't know much about marketing, but wants to be better at it?
Yeah. I would say it's always a tough one because I'm sure you're reading a lot of the same things that I am, but, and just don't be like the guys that you hate who are advertising and not, you know, selling out, I guess, as in what you just explained about putting the work in and doing it over and over again, I think is the main answer to anything. I mean, it's the answer that you got to building an audience, something that you did, you're just like doing week in, week out, weekly. And then it's just finding out where and how to put the message. So that's the first base. So the foundation is you got to be like choosing what kind of message and what is it that you're communicating and doing it consistently. And then you find an audience. And then there's the more technical sort of part of things, which is to start looking at, okay, do I want to spend money advertising? And if I spend money advertising, what's the point? What am I trying to do? What can I start playing with in terms of experimenting? Like, so for example, to reach people on Facebook, say, Facebook is now organized completely so that you, almost completely, so that you have to pay if you want to reach people. And then like dipping a toe into looking at, is it worth putting money into? It can be absolutely worth it if you have some goal, such as I want to grow my audience to be able to have, people to talk to for a future crowdfunding project or for a Patreon, for example. So, yeah. And honestly, I'm learning completely as well because there's a very different, the same principles apply, but I think it's a different world between like when I'm working in an advertising agency for very large brands on who have very big budgets, and we're making a TV ad, and it's almost like it's a given. We're going to be spending this much money. It's going to go on TV, and we'll be spending this much money on Facebook, and this much money. Well, so, you know, they have the money. So it's going to be like seen by people. And, but for what I'm doing personally, like you are, I'm like building my podcast and looking at, you know, how do I, and I have the same questions. How do I get more people to listen to my podcast? And generally speaking, the main answer is, well, you got to make sure that people who listen to podcasts hear about you. And usually that means, getting onto other podcasts and inviting other podcasts to participate with you. So that's one of the main ways. And then just being consistent and making and like inviting people that are going to be interesting. And oh, so actually that's the other main thing that, to start with. This is for everyone, and all the creators, because there's so much things being created right now. And there's so much, there's like way more things you can consume than you have time for. Yeah. So the first, and I'm sure you've learned this as well, is I took a while to experiment with what I was going to be doing for my podcast, to come onto something that I would be doing that interests me and that I would be doing regardless if anybody of anybody listening or not.
Right.
At first I tried different things that I was, it was very convoluted and complicated because I was trying to think of, okay, well, I want to sell my services as a consultant. So it should be something that would be interesting to the people who would be willing to pay for it. And then I found it was really complicated and I didn't necessarily care that much. And then I was like, actually, you know what? I really enjoy reaching out to people. I like talking to creators. I always ask for people to have coffee with, but they can be busy. And so I was like, well, what if I just do that? And it's a reason to promote everybody and have a nice conversation and get to meet interesting people and learn from them. And I always like to do that, regardless of how many people are listening.
That's great.
So.
But consistency is so important. It's such a big part of it too, because you never know what's going to take off. A lot of people, you know, you think that people who've done something that's successful, that they planned it that way from the beginning. But normally, anybody who's created any successful project like yourself, you're stepping on the corpses of 50 other things that you tried to do and failed miserably at before you hit the one that doesn't. And there was some other creator who had a great analogy, which is that people who are successful in at creating things, they have like 10 different lightning rods in the air that they're just waving around. And sometimes they take one down, they put up another one, and sometimes one of them gets hit, but sometimes they don't. And you never know. Nobody knows if anyone had the secret to which project was going to get hit by lightning. Then they would, they would do it all the time. But it's just a matter of like just try it a bunch and keep doing it. Never stop. Don't. Because if you stop, then you definitely won't, your rod definitely won't get hit by lightning, right?
Yes.
Just consistency.
Right. Thank you. I think that's a great place to end this conversation, actually. Totally. All right. Just to make sure, so where can people find you, all the different places that they can look up and support everything you're doing or read Itchy Feet?
Yeah, you can read Itchy Feet at itchyfeetcomic.com. You can learn about the game at itchyfeetgame.com. Also on Facebook, facebook.com/itchyfeetcomic. I'm on Twitter and Instagram as well. That's the main
and
one.
And I'll add all the links on the show notes so they can look you up, but Itchy Feet is easy enough so they can all find you there. Great. Fantastic. Definitely. Thank you so much for the conversation. That was really fun.
Thanks for having me, William.
All right. Well, that's another episode of the Ice Cream for Everyone podcast wrapped up. I think we've been focusing a little bit on games recently, as you may have seen. There's going to be a couple more episodes on games, and I'm working on reaching new guests that I can branch out a little bit. We'll be probably soon enough circling back around advertising, but I also want to make sure when I talk to people in advertising and marketing, they're kind of like have interests outside of that. So they're creators or have interests beyond marketing and advertising, because as you may well know, Ice Cream for Everyone is not really meant to be dedicated entirely to advertising and marketing or even to gaming in general. It's really me having candid conversations with creators about what is the source of their creativity, where does it come from, what leads people to create the things they do, whether they live from it or not, and interesting stories and backgrounds, and that's the idea of Ice Cream for Everyone, and really just having some fun with it. As I said at the beginning, you could find the show on Ice Cream for Everyone. That's www.icecreamforeveryone.net. You can email me, villem@icecreamforeveryone.net. That's WILLEM. You can send me a tweet at @icyvillem. You can post comments. Please leave a review. Or, you know what? If you just enjoyed this episode and you're still listening by now, how about you email it to a friend? And then one more person gets to hear the show. And that's really just what I'm looking for more people to be discovering the show, essentially. That's about it, really. I'll be back in a couple of weeks. Have a fantastic afternoon, evening, morning, night, whatever time it is for you. Thank you. Bye.